There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Mourinho Gate rumbles on. We'll be addressing that in the first hour of the show. There is Premier League action, but no early kickoff for you. There was a Friday game last night. We'll reflect on that one and also look ahead to our 6 p.m. kickoffs. Five games off at 6 p.m. and, of course, our feature game after that will be Manchester United against Newcastle. Will that be the last game for Jose Mourinho in charge at Old Trafford, or will become clearer throughout the remainder of this evening? Plus, it's the final of the Abu Dhabi T20 down in the capital. India are taking on the West Indies. England are over in Sri Lanka, to name just a few of the international series that we'll be having a look at between now and the close of play. Japanese Grand Prix, well, close of play there. On today's action, we do know who's in pole position. We'll tell you very, very shortly. And the build-up continues. I was going to say it begins, but it very much continues. McGregor against Nurmagomedov is taking place in the early hours of tomorrow. It is getting very, very feisty between those two. In the official weigh-in, there was yet more talk between the two, yet more chat between the two teams, and we will reflect on that build-up and, of course, put you in the picture of what to expect. Golf, you've got the Alfred Dunhill Links when the pros and the ams take to the courses of the Scotland, and of course a big day for rugby fans as well. Gallagher Prem, top 14, Pro 14, and dare we forget it, the Rugby Championship as well. We'll go stateside, we'll go down under, we'll go to every corner of the globe to cover sport for you in the next 3 hours, as long as you join us for that journey. You can text us now on 4001. You can have your say at Dubai Eye Sport, or better still, get yourself down to Barasti. We're broadcasting from the main deck down here at Barasti. There is a beautiful breeze blowing across the venue at present. A lot of people enjoying the late afternoon into early evening sundown here at Barasti. So if you like your sport, if you like your sun, get yourself down to Barasti now.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8. The conversation starts right here. We'd like you to join that conversation by, as I said, text us your thoughts on 4001. We start with one story that is dominating the headlines this afternoon, and it centres around a certain Jose Mourinho. We're going to be hearing from Gary Neville in just a few moments' time. We'll also be hearing from a number of familiar voices to Dubai Eye listeners on this one. None more so than our two grill panellists this afternoon. Mark Archer, good afternoon, and welcome to you, Archie Arch.
Afternoon, Tom. Afternoon, listeners. And also Sean O'Shea joining us. So good to see you both. And yeah, it's a massive day in sport. There seems to be so much happening around the globe. Pretty much every sport is happening to a high degree somewhere, Tom. And looking forward to it. I'll be all across this afternoon. Rugby Championship blockbuster match up there at altitude at Loftus-Versfeld. The All Blacks seeking revenge on the Springboks. We'll also talk about a bit of international cricket. Test match gets underway in Dubai tomorrow with the Aussies taking on Pakistan. The Australian, of course, it's their first test match since all the drama that happened on their tour to South Africa early in the year. So they've named their team for that. Of course, action also taking place in the test playing world. India have, I can tell you, defeated the West Indies by a massive margin earlier today in that match. And, of course, down to Abu Dhabi in the capital, where you've been for a lot of the weekend, at the Sheikh Zayed Cricket Stadium, the Abu Dhabi T20. So plenty to talk about. Formula One in Japan. There's also golf taking place in Scotland. So I'll be bang up to date with all these scores, runs, wickets, incidents as they happen this afternoon.
You mentioned our other grill panellist there, former footballer turned coach, and the man that I am going to credit with Luke Shaw's recent international recall as well. Sean O'Shea is with us as well. Good to have you on board.
Good afternoon, chaps. Nice to be back. It's nice to be down at Barasti again, out of the studio in the sunshine.
They've gone convertible. They've taken their roof off.
Yeah, luckily it's not too hot today. It's nice temperature, nice breeze, nice fan blowing on us.
That means that the summer or the winter or whatever it is just around the corner. So cooler months upon us. So get yourself down to Barasti. Sean, good to have you here. Let's get your thoughts on this developing story, a story that has really sort of broken the last 24 hours. If we were to believe the Daily Mirror newspaper, a tabloid newspaper over in the UK, and why wouldn't you believe the Daily Mirror over in the UK? Jose Mourinho is done for. He's going to be sacked later on this evening.
I would find it very hard to believe that they're going to sack him, irrespective of the result this evening. I would be astonished if they did. But I suppose, like they say, there's no smoke without fire, is there? So there's obviously something going on at Manchester United. We seem to be talking about Mourinho and Man United all the time. Not even, you know, just this season, going back into last season. For me, I think he has to go. I think it's got to the point where it seems so toxic now at Manchester United that he can't stay. You know, there's this thing about, is it the board, is it the club, is it Mourinho, is it the players? At the end of the day, like we all know that you can't sack 25 players. So the simple thing, or the easiest thing, not the cheapest thing, but the easiest thing would be to remove the manager. The players don't seem to be playing for him. There's just a horrible atmosphere at the club, and I think that, you know, players are quite clever, I think, in football, and if they don't believe in the manager and they don't trust the manager, I'm not saying they're playing poorly on purpose, but they don't have that belief or motivation to play for him, I think they want him gone.
Well, let's get the thoughts now of the host of Off Script, our head of sport at ARN, and a Manchester United fan himself. Chris McCarty joins us live on the line. Chris, appreciate you taking time out of your weekend to speak to us about this one, but I also appreciate this is a story close to your heart. Now, just try and put us in the picture. How have we got to this point? Is this just tabloid meddling? Or, as Sean was saying there, is there no smoke without fire?
Absolutely, Tom. A very good afternoon to you, to Shawnee, to Arch, and to the listeners as well. You've got to go back, I think, Tom, to day one of pre-season. The negative, I guess, outlook that Jose Mourinho gave off on that day one of pre-season. This has been a long time in coming for me, and I appreciate there's an awful lot wrong with that football club. And Gary Neville, who I know we're going to hear from in just a moment, spoke very passionately, spoke from the heart last night on Sky Sports ahead of that Brighton West Ham game in the Premier League. He is not happy, and he is right to point the finger at the hierarchy. This goes a lot deeper than just Jose Mourinho, Tom. That being said, and I was listening intently there to what Sean O'Shea said, he's absolutely spot on. At the end of the day, the responsibility for results out on that football field, the product that we see week in and week out, comes down to the football manager. Jose Mourinho has been joyless in that job for too long now. There are too many players who are playing for themselves. There are too many players not interested in working with Jose Mourinho, and it ends with him. He has allowed to what has happened in pre-season, whether he got the centre-back that he wanted or not, he has allowed that to permeate down into the dressing room. Simply put, Tom, whether it happens this evening, and it's my understanding that it won't. I know the Press Association over in the UK are now claiming that senior sources have told them that Jose Mourinho will be given longer to turn this around. But whether it happens tonight, next week, next month, Jose Mourinho is a dead man walking for the simple fact that too many players do not want to play under him. It's joyless, and he has to take an awful lot of responsibility for those reasons as to why.
Chris, just want to bring you back to a couple of years ago. Myself and you were at Wembley watching an FA Cup final victory over Crystal Palace, and we were sat outside the stadium celebrating as the crowds walked away, and we heard rumours at that stage that Louis van Gaal had been sacked only an hour pretty much after Manchester United winning that FA Cup. Surely, that being the bookend of that season, surely Manchester United will wait until an adequate replacement is ready to come in. They will, because I can't see, he doesn't really have a number two. It's outstanding. There's not a lot of top quality coaches ready to replace him at the drop of a notice, and surely they'll wait and give him throughout the season to see what comes, and then they'll take their time about finding the right replacement.
Well, yeah, a couple of things there, Archer, absolutely spot on. I remember being sat with you, as you rightly point out, after that victory over Crystal Palace, news filtered through that Louis van Gaal had in actual fact been sacked, that despite winning the FA Cup that evening. And again, to go back to what Gary Neville said last night, he's absolutely spot on. The way United have gone about the sackings of their managers, David Moyes, it was leaked in the media before he himself knew. There was rumblings before Louis van Gaal knew. Jose Mourinho again today, and again, it is my understanding he will keep his job regardless of the result tonight. But this isn't the behaviour befitting of a club of the stature of Manchester United. So that needs to be looked into. That's one side of things. I think you're raising an interesting point there, Arch, when you say about the lack of alternatives. Zinedine Zidane's the obvious one. Now, the problem there is Zizou is not fluent in English. There's been a lot of reports in the past week or two that he's been learning English, that he is keen on the job. It's my understanding that, in actual fact, Zinedine Zidane would be more keen to head over to Italy with Juventus. There seems to be a little bit of a story rumbling on that he could take an executive role over in Italy with another of his former clubs before eventually replacing Max Allegri as Juventus boss at the end of the season. So Zizou, put him to one side. Who have you got? You've got Arsene Wenger. don't see that happening. Antonio Conte is as divisive as Jose Mourinho is. Laurent Blanc has history with the football club, but I don't think he's sexy enough in terms of his name in order to come in and really make an impact at Manchester United. The number one choice for me personally is Mauricio Pochettino. But again, it isn't just a simple case of replacing Jose Mourinho with a different manager. Manchester United, the whole hierarchy needs to take a step back. There's an awful lot more change that needs to happen at that football club. They need a footballing structure. Whilst CEO Ed Woodward has proven himself to have no peer from a commercial standpoint, Manchester United still trending in that right direction from making money from their name and their brand. On the football field, there's an awful lot that needs to be done. I would start with a sporting director or a director of football. I would get an ethos from top to bottom implemented, and then the football coach, regardless of who he is, he can come in and he's got the best possible conditions to be a success. Right now, Manchester United, they're working in the dark ages. They're dinosaurs compared to your Manchester Cities, your Barcelonas of this world. And until that changes, it doesn't really matter who you've got in charge. They're always going to be behind the likes of City, Barca, Bayern Munich, Juventus and the like.
Chris, interesting that we wake up to these stories coming out of the tabloids. No big surprise that these are stories and rumours being circulated by certain tabloids as well. But I think we've also got to recognise, I mean, there is history, isn't there, with the owners giving forewarning to previous managers that they were for the chop. And I think this is one of the things that Gary Neville was having a pop at, as he said, we'll hear from him in just a little while. Do we sort of need to look at the culture of the club at the moment, the way it's being run by its not just by the manager, but also by the owners?
Absolutely, Tom. You're bang on, and that's exactly what I was saying there, that the fact that Ed Woodward, you know, is someone who learnt from David Gill, and I think an awful lot of people will forget when Fergie went into the sunset after 26 years in charge of that football club. He left the same summer as David Gill, the chief executive, and David Gill was hugely respected, not only in footballing circles, but in business circles as well. There was a huge vacuum left. Now, Ed Woodward, who was his prodigy, he came in as CEO, and from a commercial standpoint, he's done a wonderful job. Manchester United have paint sponsors, they have tyre sponsors, they've got every sponsor under the sun. The problem with Ed Woodward is he isn't a football man. He is relying on relationships built up through football agents. He is relying on favours. Truth be told, Ed Woodward has probably trusted one or two individuals who, in hindsight, he shouldn't have trusted. What's happened there is no clarity. There is no proper recruitment strategy in place. You've looked at David Moyes, struggled to bring the players that he wanted. You've had Louis van Gaal. Again, he's looked at certain players that fit his style. Jose Mourinho has come in. What you've ended up with is a squad that is hugely unbalanced. There is a number of players at that football club who, for me, are not good enough to play for Manchester United. And that comes from the very top. The fact there isn't a structure in place, the fact that they don't really know what Manchester United is. We talk of the ethos of Manchester United. We talk of it as being attacking, two wide men, go after teams. The reality is David Moyes, not a manager in keeping with that philosophy. Louis van Gaal certainly was in his younger years, Tom. Now, as he got older, he became more pragmatic. Jose Mourinho, exactly the same. So they're making managerial choices that aren't in keeping with the traditions of Manchester United. What you've ended up with is a complete colossal mess. It doesn't matter if you change Jose Mourinho. And I come back to this. Top to bottom, there needs to be reform at that football club in order for it to be a success in the long term moving forward. Removing Jose Mourinho, and I will say it again, it is inevitable that he will not be at that football club. Whether it's a week or a month, he will be gone. But that's just the start of it. It needs a footballing structure. It needs someone at the very top who knows what they're doing. From a business point of view, yes, Ed Woodward ticks the box. From a footballing point of view, he's a long way off.
Sean O'Shea listening on intently there. Sean's listening to what you have to say there. And Sean, root and branch refurbishment, not just of the team, the club.
Yeah. I mean, I absolutely agree with Chris. Like, from a long-term point of view, they do need to restructure. They do need a set ethos. You look at, you know, Liverpool and City are obvious examples. But for me, it'd be interesting to see what Chris thinks as well. What's the short-term solution for Manchester United? Because obviously, and Chris feels very strongly about Mourinho going, and I kind of agree with him in exactly what he's saying. What is the short-term solution for them? Because Mourinho's not going to be there at the end of the season, I don't think. Whether he goes today or tomorrow or in a week's time, like Chris, I don't know. But the problem is what do they do in the short term? Because they need Champions League football. They need to be successful. They need to be in the top four. They need to be challenging for trophies. And with the squad that they've got, even though I agree that it's not the best Manchester United squad you know, that they've ever had. They've got good players there, and they need to bring somebody in that's going to play for the new manager, for the new coach, whether it's a short-term solution to the end of the season.
But interesting point that Sean makes there, Chris, this idea of it being a bit of a vicious cycle, because, yeah, OK, if you come in as a manager, should be given a bit of time to bring in the players that you want for them to get your ethos, your ethic. But with the sort of merry-go-round of managers that we've seen at Manchester United in recent times, is replacing Jose Mourinho at this stage just going to be a step backwards to a certain degree?
You're absolutely both spot on in that regard, and it is the perfect, because, as I say, everything's going to come hand in hand. And Sean's right, you can sack Mourinho, and if you're not going to sort out the house, you bring in someone short-term. For the Glazers, for Woodward, they are judged on Champions League football. They're looking at the balance sheets, not necessarily the results on the field. Champions League is an absolute must for them moving forward. So what do? Do you sack Mourinho? Do you look to bring a Laurent Blanc in? Do you promote Michael Carrick with no managerial experience? Of course, now part of Jose Mourinho's management team. I would imagine, like anything else, this is a professional outfit. Intermediaries have been out there, I'm sure, in the last couple of weeks, speaking to other agents to ask, to furnish, to garner whether their clients would be interested in a move to Manchester United. The number one choice, and reading between the lines, and certainly for me, is Mauricio Pochettino. Would he be willing to leave Spurs mid-season? No, I don't think he would, given the fact that Spurs are in a better place in the table than Manchester United, and the fact that they're moving into this brand new state-of-the-art Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. So for Pochettino, he won't leave mid-season. He is a long-term appointment for me, so you're absolutely right to point this out. But again, it comes down to it. If Mourinho sticks around for longer, the players become ever more alienated. Ed Woodward, the Manchester United board, they don't want to see Paul Pogba hankering for a move elsewhere. They don't want to see Alexis Sanchez doing likewise, David De Gea. These are huge, huge assets to that football club. And again, it's a player's market these days. You've got to keep your top men happy. Despite the fact, in Paul Pogba's case, I don't think he's ever hit the heights that we expected when he joined that football club. That being said, though, for Ed Woodward, for that football club, Paul Pogba is a huge commodity. They want to keep players like that happy, and that will inevitably mean that Jose Mourinho will need to go on his way. It's what they do in the short term to ensure that they get Champions League, and then they can plan long term from there. It is an absolute mess right now to him. I don't know what the answer is. All I know is if it keeps going the way it's going, Jose Mourinho and the players will continue, that it'll become a chasm between them, because right now there is nil and void relationship. That will only mean and permeate more poor results on the football field, which means Manchester United come the end of the season, forget Champions League football, they won't even be getting Europa League football, and then it becomes that much more difficult to attract the very best in managerial talent.
Difficult one, this one, and just listening to what all you guys are saying at the moment, and from it I'm sort of gleaning this idea, Chris, that it's not so much a question of if now, it's a question of when. We understand the press associations, you said, come out and said that the board support the manager. The club themselves have come out today and they've said they've got, the manager's got their full support. However, with this elephant in the changing room at the moment about his future, if, and I don't like playing with ifs, if Newcastle knock four past Manchester United at Old Trafford tonight, do we see a different scenario?
I think we can all retire if Newcastle were to hit four against Manchester United at Old Trafford today. Rafa Benitez and Newcastle don't score four goals, Tom, but my goodness, if that was to happen, I think his position then becomes untenable. And then it really does become a real discussion point. I've not even considered for one second that Newcastle are going to get a result today. And that kind of, I guess, maybe I'm blinded by the fact that I am a Manchester United fan. But if that were to happen, oi, 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 given the fact that it is an international fortnight break, then you would think that change would absolutely be a necessity in the not too, you know, short term. Like, literally, immediate change would be required. But as I say, I think from what I'm reading, Manchester United are hell-bent on giving Jose Mourinho more time, probably tallying with what you boys have just mentioned, that there are very few genuine alternatives out there, that they've looked at it and they've thought, listen, for us moving forward, it is better that we stay with Jose, stick with him, and then it's up to Jose and his coaching staff, by hook or by crook, to get those players who we understand are not fighting for Jose back on site, because it's imperative that happens, Tom, or it's going to be a catastrophic season. It's going to be a long season, and Manchester United, forget Champions League and European places, they're going to be mid-table fodder, and then, as I said, that has a huge bearing on then who you can attract come the end of the campaign.
We've all talked about this from purely footballing terms in many ways. We've got a sports marketeer par excellence alongside us here in the form of Mark Archer. Yeah, that's you, Mark. You can pick up your microphone now, yeah. It'll definitely go to you. But I'm just wondering as well, I mean, putting the sort of emotions of football aside and looking at it from a board, from a brand perspective as well, could that be critical to the brand? Is it more toxic at the moment if you're having bad results, or losing such a marquee manager as Mourinho, could that have a negative impact?
Well, winning is all important in sport, and if you're a sponsor of a team, you want to see them going well. You want to see the team and the club performing in unison. You don't want to see disruptions at board level and CEO level and management level and players unhappy. There's so many massive brands associated with Manchester United, not just the team and the club, but also with the individual players. There's a lot at stake. This is a $1 billion game. Everyone's playing here, and ultimately, it's a business. We don't like to say that about the Premier League, but it's a big business, and business decisions will get made. And it's very important for United's coffers that they do. As Sean said, they need to qualify for Europe. So much is staked on that. A lot of bonus payments from all their sponsors will be contingent on them qualifying for Europe and playing in the Champions League football. And so it just means a lot. So there's a lot at stake, not just on the field, but off the field. And all those things have to work in unison. So it's a tough time for when you're one of the three biggest clubs in the world. And, yeah. And let's not be wrong, they are one of the three biggest clubs in the world commercially. But they're not showing it on the field. And so then the pressure comes on the manager and on the team, because it's very hard to do commercial deals when the team's lying in 10th position, as they are, in the Premier League and battling their way in Europe. So they need to find something. Something has to happen, albeit I kind of disagree with you guys. I think they're going to stick with Mourinho to the end of the season. I think they don't have a choice. Unless we bring in big Sam Allardyce or someone off the bench there to do a recovery job. But we're not at that stage yet. We're not quite there. But something is going to have to give. And as you guys have rightly said, Mourinho is the obvious pointing boy there. But he signed a new contract last year. As Sean was saying, I think off air, it's a $30 million piece of excess they're going to have to get rid of for Mourinho, and there's no replacement in the short term that's obvious, or in the long term at this stage. So they're going to have to work their way through it, and these are all very, very well paid professionals. Whether you're getting on in the dressing room or not, you need to show up on a Saturday and play for 90 minutes for your club, because you're getting paid hundreds of thousands of pounds to do so, and that is the least you expect as a fan. It's the very minimum. So they're going to have to sort it out, because the commercial pressure is going to tell. And the pressure on the pitch is also going to come to the front.
Everyone's given their opinions on this one. We'll try and work through more of those opinions. Appreciate Chris joining us over the weekend. I'm going to let him go now, not though before he's reacted to a comment that's just popped up on social media from one of his fellow countrymen. I might need him to help me in a bit of translation here as well. Pat Nevin, the former Scotland winger, has just said or posted, "You can play the way that Jose plays in comparison to the way Liverpool and City play, but you'd better win all the time, because the fans and the players will get sick of it otherwise. If Mourinho doesn't start winning games, he'll get the hoof and he'll deserve it." Chris, what's that mean for those out there unfamiliar with the hoof?
The hoof means he will get sacked, essentially, yes. Very well put there from Pat Nevin. He's absolutely spot on. We've talked about it time and time again, whether it be on Sports Tonight, off script, on the grill as well, Tom, with your fine self. But, you know, when you look at it, when you play the way and play the football that Jose Mourinho does, you leave yourself, your margins are that much smaller, because you're not playing a beautiful brand of football. You're not entertaining. You know, even when you're losing, and Arsene Wenger, he was given a lot of time because the thought was that Arsenal were playing a nice and a pleasing, aesthetically pleasing brand of football. That isn't the case at Manchester United. And final point for me, I think United's woes are crystallised even further when you consider City are playing the brand of football that they are, and they are top of the table. Liverpool have recruited so well. The very antithesis of what Manchester United have done are at the top of the table. Throw in the fact that Leeds United are down in the Championship playing a nice brand of football on top of the Championship. To be a Manchester United fan right now is glooming awful. Given that fact, though, we've had 20 years of good stuff. I'm not complaining too much, but yeah, it's not a nice time to be a United fan right now, that's for sure.
Chris, really appreciate your time over the weekend. Enjoy the remainder of your weekend, my friend. We'll catch up in the office tomorrow, but thanks so much indeed for your time this Saturday.
Great stuff. Thanks, Tom.
Big thanks to Chris McCarty. Let's hear from Gary Neville now. He gave his thoughts, as Chris was alluding to, just before the West Ham and Brighton game last night. Brighton winning that one 1-0 from a Glenn Murray goal in the first half to get all 3 points yet again against West Ham. West Ham have never won against Brighton at Brighton during the Premier League era and during Brighton's time in the Premier League, which is quite a statistic for the South Coast team. Anyway, Gary Neville took the opportunity to give his thoughts, his very passionate thoughts on the subject.
I'm furious going back 3-4 years ago when David Moyes was sacked, when it broke a day before, to journalists. I think of Louis van Gaal being sacked in the evening of a cup final and finding out from other people. I think about how the club's been operated. If this is true, we don't know if it's true, but if this is true, and Jose Mourinho is going to walk out at Old Trafford tomorrow, it's almost like a dead man walking. Those fans will absolutely turn towards that boardroom. It's unacceptable. And I have to say that Jose Mourinho will get the biggest support he's ever had in his life tomorrow, I think, in that ground. And I'll be there to give it to him. Because if this is true and it's broken the day before it's going to happen and he's going to be sacked after the game or at the weekend, it's an absolute disgrace. Where's the values and the principles of Manchester United if this is true, that the journalists find out and it isn't announced at the right time? Look, at the end of the day, this is now going on for 5 or 6 years. And I have to say that any manager, Jose Mourinho is one of the best managers in the world. And I think at this moment in time, any manager would struggle in that football club, the way in which the recruitment's handled, the way in which it operates. And enough's enough for me. I love that football club. I absolutely love it to death. It's been my life. It's given me everything. And I'm not turning on my football club. But I have to say, something has to change, and it isn't the manager. It's above that. And I'm furious as I sit here thinking that there's a report that's broken out. Journalists don't break stories of this nature unless they're absolutely certain. And I hope it's not true. But if it is true, I think it's an absolute disgrace.
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, where the game is always on.
No early in the Premier League. There is an early over in Spain at the moment. Eibar are taking on Girona at the moment. It is Eibar who have taken the early lead in the first half. We'll get goal scorer for you on that one in just a few moments' time. Let's talk cricket now, if we can, because there is no shortage of cricket to talk about at the moment. Mark Archer, we have been keeping a close eye on proceedings down the road at the Zayed Cricket Stadium in Abu Dhabi. They're hosting the Abu Dhabi T20 at the moment. Result from a little earlier on?
Yeah, big win for the Yorkshire Vikings. They defeated the Hobart Hurricanes. So, yeah, pretty comprehensive victory for Yorkshire. And, Tom, a lot of cricket going on around the world. International cricket test match action getting underway tomorrow at Dubai International Cricket Stadium. Pakistan are taking on Australia, a new-look Australian team, of course, after that ill-fated tour to South Africa earlier in the year. And one result live in day three. It's all over in 3 days over in India in Rajkot. India, a massive win by innings and 272 runs. An absolute thrashing of the West Indies there. Hundreds for pretty much everyone that got a bat for India in that first innings. Virat Kohli, he scored his 24th test century. The young 18 debutant, Prithvi Shaw, he scored 134 and a first century also for Ravindra Jadeja. So massive win for India in that test match, first test match against the West Indies, and test match action underway tomorrow. But plenty of T20 action up the road in Abu Dhabi.
Yeah, we're going to go down there in just a few seconds' time. Just before that, just to set the scene as well, I know that you've been very much involved in developing sport, but specifically the sport that you love, cricket, here in the region. Why is T20 cricket, to your mind, a good fit for a place like Abu Dhabi?
I think, you know, you've got such a diversified sort of about of people here that everyone's sort of interested. It's a great event down there because you've got the best club sides from the likes of Australia, New Zealand, South Africa. You've got a Bangladeshi team there, the Pakistan, the team there. And so you've got the combination of so many different nationalities coming part. They've all got some of their international stars there. And it appeals to that sort of cross-generation, the mass demographic that we have here, where the population is made up by many different cultures and nationalities, and it gives them a chance to go and either see a team from where they're from. Well, it might be like Sean here from Yorkshire. I'm sure he's champing at the bit to go and watch the Yorkshire team play. Or if you're a South Africa, you go and watch the Titans play there. Or if you're a Kiwi, you can go and watch the Auckland Aces like myself. So, you know, plenty of ways in which you can support a team from your country. And we don't often see many of those teams or players here. We see a lot of Pakistan, we see a lot of international cricket, but here's a great chance to really spread the international cricketing gospel here in the capital down in Abu Dhabi.
You mentioned that I've been lucky enough to be hanging out down there over the last couple of days. It's been an absolute pleasure to be hanging out with some of the greats of the game, none more so than a member of Australia's victorious 2003-2007 Cricket World Cup teams. A man who's ranked as Australia's ninth most successful one-day international bowler, the second most successful spinner in terms of wickets taken, and an absolute force to be reckoned with in the commentary box and in and about the Abu Dhabi T20, joins us now live on the line from Abu Dhabi. It is absolute pleasure to speak to Brad Hogg. Brad, thanks so much indeed for taking time out of a busy schedule for you down there to speak to us up here in Dubai.
Well, it's extra busy, Tom, because you're meant to be commentating with us, and we're a couple of short Wakar units went home. The Halo Joe Warden has rocked back up, but your mate there, he's from New Zealand. What was his name again?
This is Mark Archer, the pride of New Zealand.
Mark, the pride of New Zealand. Well, guess what, mate? You're going to be in tears because the Auckland Aces are 51-5 after 7.5 overs down here. The Titans are really on top of you right now. But I've got to say, young Finlay Allen, the under-19 young player who played in the World Cup earlier this year that was back in New Zealand, he looks the good. So there's a lot of talent around here in this tournament.
Thanks for your report there, Hoggy. Just want to get a quick comment then. How have your fellow Australians, the Hobart Hurricanes, performed over the last couple of days?
Well, they're on the other side of the fence from Australia than what we are. So West Australia, the Perth Scorchers. So generally, Perth Scorchers aren't here. They would have been on top, but the Hobart Hurricanes... They didn't prepare too well today. They haven't won any games, so they're going home with a couple of losses. But the good thing about it is they had some young talent over here. They were testing out that young talent, and they would have learned a lot in these conditions. And that's what it's all about, to be able to expose your young talent to quality international players. And, you know, so you're going to get tested, and it's best to get tested before your main season starts when you get back home.
Hoggy, it is a very competitive place at the moment in terms of T20 franchises, the world over competitions as well. Is Abu Dhabi, to your mind, you've had the opportunity to spend a bit of time down there to hang out and get the vision of the organisers and those that are throwing money behind this. Is it a good place geographically to host a tournament like this? Is it something that could grow in the future?
Definitely. I think it's something that should grow down the future. It's a short tournament, rewards clubs for doing well in their own tournaments. It's only short and sharp. For some, for Yorkshire, it's an end-of-season trip, and they came over and they were very competitive. They wanted to win. They were very upset that they got beaten by Lahore Qalandars the other night. And the Titans are coming over, and they're fully prepared as well for their season. So it's one of those things which it's a good initiative. I'd like to see a UAE team in here as well, just to expose them to international players as well, and I think that will set the tournament off hugely. And we've got the Afghanistan team here as well, the Boost Defenders, but they've probably only got half of their teams, and they've been strengthened with a few internationals because we've got the Afghanistan T20 League going on now.
Looks like it's going to be the Lahore Qalandars, the local team, if you like, the home team, given the fact that they've played in these conditions. They played on that ground before, many of them. Looks like they'll be taking on the Titans in the final, according to the way results have gone and the way things are going at the moment. To be fair, though, those have been the two best prepared and the two best supported teams down there.
They're definitely the two best prepared teams. I think they're more at full strength. I think if you look at the Titans lineup, they've got Chris Morris, they've got Albie Morkel here, so they've got a lot of strength there. But they have come over and tested some youth. It's an interesting one now. That someone who's bowling right now, he's a spinner, Gregory Mulaqana. Now, he comes from one of the townships just outside of Pretoria. And they picked him up just playing backyard cricket. And he can bowl spin with both hands. So he's bowling left hand at the moment. So I want to see if he can see what his right arm spins like if he gets the opportunity to be able to do it to the left-hander. So I just can't believe he's got that multi-purpose aspect. And as I'm talking, I think he's coming around the wicket to the left-hander now, and he is going to bowl one with his right arm.
Hoggy, that does sound very impressive. Would have loved to have seen you do that in your career. Speaking of young, upcoming talent, I managed to catch the game last night on TV and watch the Titans, and one guy I hadn't heard of before, Tony D'Souza, he scored a rapid-fire century, 106 off only 57 balls. He does look like a talent for the future.
Well, he does. He plays the percentages as well. I think some of the younger players here, or some of the players I've seen, just try and be a little bit too attacking. That was a really good innings last night too, because they were under the pump, and I think David was out the other end, and the ball was seeming in those first three or four overs, and they couldn't get away to a good start. I think there was 40 runs on the board after the power play, but then once the ball stopped seeming, the lower order batters after David got out and D'Souza just took the game apart and got them to a formidable score of 218. But the other player, I think, Chris Morris, I think it was 43 off 18 deliveries, or could have been even less deliveries than that. He just absolutely annihilated the attack last night of the Boost defenders. So they've got good depth in their batting.
Hoggy, it'd be remiss of us to let you go without just talking a little bit of Test cricket. Your fellow countrymen, the Australian, the Baggy Greens, are up in Dubai. They start a Test match series against Pakistan tomorrow. It's been a pretty turbulent time in Australian cricket the last sort of 6 months. Obviously, the well-documented banning of Steve Smith and David Warner and Cameron Bancroft. And that, it has given some opportunities to some players who haven't been in that Test setup. Aaron Finch, Travis Head, and a new name, Manus Labuschagne, are making their debutants in Test cricket tomorrow. Can you tell us much about those three players, what they'll bring to that Aussie Test lineup, and of course, just give us your thoughts on, you know, Australia's pretty terrible record over here in the subcontinent.
Yeah, I like Travis Head. I like Aaron Finch. Manus, I haven't seen too much of, but he performed well last year in Shield cricket, so he's got his opportunity. I think with Manus as well, it's his personal background as well, that he's the quality of person that he is. I think that's one thing. You know, you've got the talent, but you want to make sure you've got the right characters within your team. And I think that's what Australia are doing, making sure that they've got the right characters. Because if you've got strong characters in your team that gel together, you're going to have a bigger chance of success. You know, it's not a team of champions that win; it's a champion team that wins. So that's the path that they've gone down. I think the path that they've gone down, you know, you might look at it with Steve Smith, David Warner, and Cameron Bancroft. It was a bit harsh on their penalties, but we had to make a statement. You can't afford to have that sort of stuff happening in Test cricket or any form of the cricket. We want it cleaned up, and Australia have taken the front foot. On that regard, and, you know, wanting to make sure that cricket is the gentleman's game and the game that is, you know, we respect each other and it leads good morals for all of life.
Hoggy, the final is coming up in just a few moments' time. 8 o'clock this evening, there will be a break. The final qualifier ongoing at the moment. Lahore Calendars have booked their place there. Apart from an absolute disaster, it looks like the Titans will also be there. It'll be South Africa against the Pakistani franchise a little later on in proceedings. 8 p.m. tickets still available if people want to get down there. I need to let you go because your co-commentators are falling like flies at the moment. So you're doing commentary, you're doing pitch analysis, you're doing the interviews, you're doing the prize giving later on. You'll probably be driving the bus back to the hotel.
Well, Tommy, you've taught me well too, because you're very experienced about that. Look, it's great to be able to get that opportunity and do something different. So thanks very much for your help and your aid to get me through those tough things. It's not that easy. Anyone out there who looks at Tom presenting on TV and doing those lead roles, I tell you what, it's not that easy when you've got a few voices going through that earpiece and you're trying to listen to the person you're interviewing.
Mate, you it looks like
fun,
second
Tom,
nature to you.
A lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, we're all tuning in and we'll be down there with you very, very shortly. I'll let you get back to it, my friend. Really kind of you to join us live on the line here on The Grill. Really kind of you to be here in the UAE as part of this, the inaugural Abu Dhabi T20. I know you're flying out a little later on today, but I hope you do come back very, very soon. For now, Brad Hogg, thanks very much indeed for your time.
Thanks very much, guys.
Big thanks to Hoggy for joining us live on the line. And we've been talking about this tournament, Arch and myself, here from our broadcast position. I mean, some great franchises coming over. Yeah, I take Hoggy's point there. You know, there's a lot of under-19 players, a lot of youth, but a number of experienced players as well, which is seems to be the blend, the given blend for T20 franchises at the moment. But talking of experience, just look in that commentary box.
I was going to say, you've got the likes of Brian Lara in there, one of the all-time greats. Mahela Jayawardena, one of the best players ever to come from Sri Lanka, without a doubt. Dougie Brown, former Warwickshire, England, Scotland, international there. And Waka Yunus, one of the best fast bowlers of all time. So and yourself, one of the best front foot four defensive shots that I've ever seen, Tom.
The best leave ever. I don't know. Just leave it alone, Tom. Let them get on with it. James
and Hoggy. And Hoggy, of course, had an amazing career. And, you know, if it wasn't for the likes of, Shane Warne and Stuart McGill, he would have played a lot more Test cricket and had a wonderful career, particularly in the T20 game where he's played for maximised his T20 career to the max. He's played franchise cricket all around the world, and he's as experienced as anyone being able to call the shots in terms of T20 cricket. Amazing left-arm Chinaman spinner.
Yeah, great sort of cult hero, isn't it? Because a man that got a test call early doors, and then he had a 7-year hiatus in test match cricket before he was recalled to the Australian side, but really sort of found his métier, found his place in T20 cricket a little later on in life. But as you said, took to it like a duck to water, played on numerous occasions for Australia, and more recent, I mean, he's only sort of hung up his boots in the last few months or something like that. I mean, the guy's, given half a chance, he'd still be playing franchise cricket out there.
Oh, it's amazing, yeah. And I guess when you focus on franchise T20 cricket, like a lot of guys have done now, you know, curtailing their sort of first-class careers, their Red Bull cricket careers and Test cricket, and focused on T20 cricket, it's a little bit easier on the body, Tom. And as a bowler, you're only expected to bowl 4 overs a game, so that's pretty good for them. And being a spin bowler, it's even better. He's done incredibly well, and it's great to see a hugely talented player. I mean, amazing art bowling left-arm leg spin, and was as good as anyone in the last decade.
Great entertainer as well. Lovely chap. Good time to good person to spend a bit of time with. His autobiography called The Wrong'un. Love that. You know, read that as you would. You know, obviously part of his mastering is art. The Wrong'un. He's part of the commentary team. The final is getting underway at 8 o'clock. They have to have that 2-hour gap between the last qualifier and the final. So final schedule for 8 o'clock. This evening, Lahore Calenders will be in action, and it looks like they'll be taking on the Titans a little later on. So if you would like to get down there, there are tickets available. They are available on the door, and it is open door policies. Do come on down. There is food, there is refreshments, there is hospitality if you wish, but there is also great cricket with some world-class cricketers on show right here in the UAE. So if you are at a loose limb this evening, get yourself down there to the Zayed Cricket Stadium. All the details you can find on the website, dedicated website, abdabit20.ae, for the latest.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, where the game is always on.
Listening to Dubai Eyewear 3.8, let's just stick with the cricket if we can for a moment, Archie. Before we do that, though, I just want to go over to Sean O'Shea. He's got the latest on the early kickoff over in Spain. And we haven't been giving it enough attention, but we should be. It's a fascinating game.
It has been a fascinating game. Do you know, when the fixtures come out at the start of the season, Girona versus Eibar is not one that you look for, is it? But I've been sat here now while you've been talking about the cricket. And just watch a fascinating first half. And VAR, it's like the World Cup all over again, because VAR has dominated that first half. Yeah. 1-0 up, Eibar went 1-0 up through a VAR decision penalty, and then through Charles that scored that, and then we had an equaliser in the 40th minute from Stuani, and then literally 2 minutes later they broke again, cross and the finish from Stuani, and it's gone to VAR, and we had to wait 4.5 minutes. I timed it, so I was trying to see how long the decision would take. It took 4.5 minutes, but they've actually given the goal. So they've gone, Girona have gone 2-1 up, cruising to half time, and then just before half time, corner for Eibar, captain steps up, Arbia, and bangs in a header, and it's 2-2 at half time. But it's been fascinating to watch, and it was interesting as well when the game kicked off. It actually told you that VAR was in action in the game, and it told you what incidents VAR would play a part in if they needed to. And again, it's dominated the first half, but it's been a fascinating game. So if you can watch, if you've got a TV in front of you, I would watch it, because it looks like it could be set for a good second half.
We're going to get ready for the second half of that one. We're also keeping an eye on Leeds against Brentford as well. That one's under off in the Championship. Leeds with aspirations to go up a division at the end of this season. Brentford have also been having a good time of it of late as well. No goals in this one. Have you read the Leeds story of late?
No, I'll be very honest with you. I don't like Leeds United Football Club.
I, don't, honesty is what we're all about on this show. I love that as well. Just the eyes. You've got to just go as both the eyes, isn't it? Do I not like Leeds United?
I do not like Leeds United. But, I mean, obviously, Bielsa went in there and Guardiola spoke very highly of him when he went in there in the summer and rated him as one of the best coaches he's ever seen. And as much as it pains me, I have seen Leeds play this season and they're playing a very, very good brand of football, which Chris McCarty mentioned before. But as a Huddersfield Town fan sitting at the bottom of the Premier League, they're essentially one place below us at top of the Championship. So it's, I suppose it's great for Leeds because obviously they were a big club and semi-final in the Champions League, you know, yet many years ago, and then down into League One, the same as Huddersfield, and haven't managed to get back to the Premier League. But to go back to your question, no, I haven't.
We will keep an eye on that one. Well, I think Arch and I will keep an eye on that one. We'll leave you to Spain.
All right, you do that one.
We'll do that one over there. Let's go just back to the cricket, Archie, very quickly before we go to the news at four, because so many stories developing through this one. This young kid that's come out in the Indian series, India taking on the West Indies at the moment, we don't need to go into too much detail, but apart from that, India absolutely annihilated West Indies in a record victory. However, they seem to have unearthed, I know it's a very early days, but they seem to have unearthed a young star.
Yeah, let me give you an update on the score, because it's all over under 3 days completion over there in Rajkot, with a massive win for India by innings and 272 runs. India's first innings, Tom, was a massive 649 for 9 declared. Three centurions. No surprises that Virat Kohli scored his 24th test century, his 17th as captain. Amazing, phenomenal consistency from Virat Kohli. We've seen a debutant first century in test cricket to Ravindra Jadeja, the all-rounder. But it was the name of a 18-year-old debutant, Prithi Shaw, with 134. He scored his 100 off literally 100 balls. And he's the fourth youngest player ever to score a test century. So India is just unearthing more and more talent. And it harps back to the sort of the Sachin Tendulkars. This guy was a schoolboy prodigy. He's played for India under 19. He scored runs in their domestic competition. He's given a chance at test cricket at home in India against the West Indies. And he's become, on debut, he scored a century, an 18-year-old. Again, fourth youngest player in history to score a test century. So has a name to look out for in the future.
Yeah, I know they drafted him in, didn't they, whilst they were over in England. He didn't play in any of the games, but maybe that was just part and parcel of the sort of future and blooding him with a little bit of experience in and around the team.
Yeah, no, wonderful. Good way to bring in youngsters is make them part of the touring environment, see what it's like in the dressing room, do all the work in the nets and just see what it's like to be part of that team environment. But it's fair to say he sees his opportunity with both hands, and he is definitely a name now to look out for in the future. We often see these young players unearthed, whether it be in Pakistan, Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, and now India have emerged. It looks like a massive talent here, pretty sure. So watch out for that name, Tom, in lights to be in the future.
And just in terms of other internationals, South Africa have got a series ongoing at the moment. At present, they're taking on Zimbabwe today, is that right?
Yeah, I think this is the third ODI.
Yeah.
A couple of wins for South Africa so far, but there's been blighted by some pretty poor pitches. I think they played in Bloemfontein a couple of days ago, and both teams struggled to really make much in terms of scoring any runs. The wicket was deemed dangerous. So I think South Africa too strong in that series. Good to see Dale Steyn back bowling, albeit with a white ball and coloured cricket. I think he's got aspirations to try and get through to that World Cup next year in England. Let's hope he can stay fit. I think his body's starting to fail him as he's got older. I doubtful whether we'll see Dale Steyn play much test cricket again, whether his body can handle 5 days of test cricket, but hopefully maybe he's got a future in 50-over cricket and T20 cricket.
They are very much underway at the moment in this one, and I can tell you that the score is 21-1 from just 6.3 overs. They're playing down in Paarl, beautiful part of the country. South Africa taking on Zimbabwe down in Paarl. So we'll keep an eye on that one for you. We'll keep an eye on the time as well. And keep your thoughts coming in to us. You can text us on 4001. We'll go to the news at 4.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcast at DubaiEye1038.com.